Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Actually kind of an introvert of sorts, and when I travel I don't really like to talk to people on an airplane. So years ago I worked at Disney in one of their corporate offices, and on my first business trip I learned, don't say that you're with Disney, because everybody on the plane has an opinion. They're going to share it with you whether you ask or not. So I very quickly decided that I was in timeshare sales, and people left me alone. So then with Blue Wind, I got into the wind business, and by the way, everybody has an opinion. So I went back to timeshare sales.
This is my good friend Henry Kelly, who is one of the principals at Blue Wind, the company that makes the nacelles for GE Vernova, you know, the big shells that go around the machine heads that go in the rotors and, you know, they go on the top of the big poles that make the windmills. And he gave a very interesting speech presentation to First Place Partners about not quite a month ago. And I've been waiting for the opportunity to share it because there's so much here. Essentially, it's about tariffs and understanding tariffs and how they work and, you know, what they're doing in the economy. But it was also funny just to hear him talk about, you know, Disney, I'm in timeshare sales. You know, wind, I'm in timeshare. Like, to get people to not talk to him, right? And so now, what about tariffs?
And I got my customs license and had a good run for a few years, because I'd start talking about the harmonized tariff schedule and the guy next to me on the plane would kind of shy away. And then President Trump came along, and now everybody has an opinion on tariffs, and everybody is a Facebook lawyer. So my career has come full circle, and I am back in timeshare sales.
He's not actually in timeshare sales. He just tells people that to get them to stop talking to him, because nobody wants to talk to a timeshare salesman, which I think is kind of funny. So he explained that, for example, he went through this whole long thing about tariffs and how the schedule works and how to figure it out, and it's very, 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 very complicated. In fact, the test, and look, Henry's a really smart guy, and he's like, and he passed the test by one question. People fail this test a lot, the test to become a certified import broker. And he says,
as a licensed broker, I have a legal responsibility to protect the revenue of the United States. If you ever lose your mind and take the customs exam, a question on every exam, what is your fundamental responsibility? It's protect the revenue of the United States. And that means to make sure the paperwork is correct and companies are paying the correct tariffs, no more, no less.
So the certified licensed customs broker, their job is to protect the income of the United States.
So now, what are tariffs? Well, no matter what anybody says, they're a tax on imports. They are used for protection, retaliation, revenue, national security. And they affect everyday prices.
Right. And remember, that's going to be one of the key questions in the resolution of the IEEPA Supreme Court case, which we'll get to some of that in a second, but is whether the president has the authority to unilaterally levy any level of tax on any kind of country at whim, or whether he has to go through a slower process. And I think he's going to lose that case. But there are other tariff avenues that he has, and they're all in the works, by the way. We'll get to all that. But the point is, the question of who has the authority to levy a tax is vital, because Congress has the authority to levy a tax, not the president. They can delegate to him certain limited aspects of that ability, but he doesn't have the ability to levy a tax. And if imports, you know, if tariffs are a tax, then he's exceeding his authority under the Constitution. Anyway, back to, you know, kind of understanding the complexity of even what is a thing made of and what country does it come from, and if it, and the way you classify the design, function, shape of the thing, how that can affect which tariff applies to it.
What you have to go through, is it metal? Is it aluminum? Is it steel? What tariffs are in effect? Because the way the president has outlined some of the tariffs, depending upon the country of origin, I have to pay certain tariffs. Some are what they call stackable. So you get 10% over here, plus you get 40% on top of that. And then depending upon what else happens. So this is just one example of one country.
And it sounds so simple when the president says the tariff from India is going to be blank or the tariff on aluminum is blank. Well, what happens if you have an aluminum thing from India? Or what happens if you have a thing that's aluminum and plastic and it came from Pakistan, but it also had a piece that came from India? You know, those, and that's why it's complicated. And that's why you've got to have somebody who is skilled and knowledgeable and passes the test and knows what they're doing. And what do you do when the tariffs change and their implementation time and date changes and the tariff that was in place yesterday is different from the tariff or combination of tariffs that apply that are in place today?
So when the president announces on Friday night he's putting in new tariffs on Saturday morning, you think Customs is able to keep up with the software required to do this? So if you pay the wrong tariff on Saturday morning, and believe me, I have known people, the tariff at Saturday at 7 a.m., was different than the tariff in the afternoon. And it all depends upon when your ship is arriving and being unloaded.
And what's the relevant point in time? Because ships don't get unloaded at a point in time. They get unloaded over the course of several hours. And what happens? I mean, it may sound like a minor sort of issue. The point I think Henry was trying to make is tariffs and the appropriate tariff and applying it accurately is complicated under normal circumstances. And it's compounded complication under the circumstances that we're dealing with now, with the way Trump is constantly adjusting, changing, tweaking, increasing, decreasing, and shifting them, at least at one point, almost on a daily basis or so it seemed. And it's, and you got to get it right, because if you get it wrong, you'll pay penalties, you might go to jail. I mean, it's really complicated. And how does a market deal with that level of complexity and constant shifting? Well, that's the point, okay? We'll come back to this in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. That's Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. Still rolling accident-free right now. Even delay-free. I-10, I-110, 2990, they all look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Henry Kelly, a good friend of mine who's one of the principals with Blue Wind, the company that makes the nacelles for the GE Vernova. That's the big white shells around the that they put on the windmills ultimately, and that contain the motors, the machine heads that GE installs. Anyway, he's talking about tariffs because he's an importer. That's part of his job with Blue Wind, is he handles, because they import a lot of stuff, right? And GE imports a lot of stuff. And, you know, dealing with importation is a major part of what they do. And even like just to kind of vaguely tie some things together, remember all the conversation we had about an inland port that would be landlocked but would be part of the port for laydown of materials, and why that would be important? And here in Pensacola, because we're exceeding our footprint on the, you know, the port, and they're trying to expand some things on the port, the American Magic Project's going in, maybe this Project MAVE is going to go in, and that's going to change the access to land space on the port. But also, okay, but also, The use of tariffs. And because if, for example, if a thing gets delivered to the port at, say, I don't know, 8 a.m. on a Monday, okay, but you anticipate the tariff on that item is going to decrease on Wednesday, but the port doesn't have space for you to let it sit there for two days until you bring it into the country from the port, because the port's an import zone, right? What if you had a space interior to the port where you could in fact store stuff, because that would still not yet be in the country? What if you could delay importing it technically for a couple of days and save maybe a few hundred thousand dollars on the tariff for those parts? You start to see some of the why this is interesting and how companies like Blue Wind, GE Vernova are kind of trying to adapt to, and in Pensacola where we have an import zone, the port, how we're trying to adapt to that to maybe make it more functional for importers.
Who pays tariffs? Consumer? Oh. Okay, going with consumers. Fortunately for us, no matter what anybody says, no matter to read on Facebook, Twitter, anything, there is a law. The importer of record pays. Who's the importer of record? It's defined in statute. It is the importer of record must be the owner, purchaser, or licensed custom broker appointed by the owner. That is to say, Blue Wind pays. It doesn't matter anything else. If we make a side arrangement with GE to split costs, or somebody covers it or whatever, when that cargo arrives at the port, Blue Wind must pay. We write the check. period.
Now, what he's getting at is this constant conversation about who ultimately pays for the tax, the tariff, right? You know, is it the consumer? Is it the manufacturer? Is it the sender, the shipper? Because you know, President Trump wants to portray it as being the shipping entity is going to send it. You know, it's just going to be absorbed by somebody, not the end consumer. And it may be. Henry's not disputing that. He's just saying that legally, the person who actually pays the tariff, the one who hands over the check, is the importer of record. How that cost gets defrayed or passed on or absorbed or whatever is a separate matter. But literally, the people who pay are the people who import.
A company has to go and apply for a refund, and you have a set number of days in which to apply for those refunds.
Sorry, I should have given you more context on this. The lawsuit about the IEEPA tariffs, okay? Part of the issue is the time in which you have to file for a refund and the fact that refunds are not automatically given. They're not, you know, they don't come after you to offer you a refund if it turns out you overpaid your tariff. So if you think the federal government's going to owe you a refund, you have to file a lawsuit. Well, you have to file a lawsuit within a certain amount of time. But what happens when somebody like a case is going to wind its way up through the Supreme Court? Well, there's a 314-day period within which you have to file the lawsuit. And so making sure that the time to pay doesn't expire in the slow legal process of handling the refund request or the challenging of the application of the tariff, which if the tariff then gets struck down, then you're entitled to a refund request. But what if it took 400 days to get that all to happen? Then what? Well, that's why he's going to explain.
If you miss that date, which is 314 days, also a test question, 314 days from the day the cargo arrives, if you miss that date, your ability to request a refund is over. And it's in statute. There's no appeal process. So because the Supreme Court is going to go past the 314 days of our first import, we're going to have to file a lawsuit, a temporary restraining order to protect our rights to apply for refunds. Have I lost you in the minutiae yet? Because here's the thing. Do you trust the Trump administration to go, hey, you know what? We agree with the Supreme Court. We're going to waive and let everybody apply for their refunds. No problems at all.
Okay, so Trump puts a tariff in, let's say in April. Importer of record Blue Wind pays the tariff. Then joins a lawsuit suing to show that the IEEPA-based tariffs are he exceeded his constitutional authority. Okay, fine. But they also have to be worried about the timeline because they have to file for a refund of the tariff they paid before 314 days expired. Well, the Supreme Court's not going to issue a ruling on this till summer beyond the 314 days. So in anticipation of winning the lawsuit, in the hopes that they win it, they have to file the TRO to make sure that they are able to demand the refund because otherwise they're depending on the good graces of the federal government under the Trump administration. You know, because what Trump does whenever there's a ruling against him is he says, oh, okay, I lose and here you go. Never. Right? He will always fight it or ignore it if he can. So it's not just the filing of the lawsuit to undo the tariff. It's the filing of the lawsuit to protect their right to demand a refund, which does not come automatically if the tariff winds up getting struck down. All of this stuff that companies are having to do to adapt to the current environment. That's what he's getting at. And oh, by the way, we are not talking about small amounts of money.
There are billions, if not trillions of dollars. This will be the largest lawsuit in U.S. history. That's not hyperbole. That's what's coming. This is going to be a grand mess because I am firmly in the belief Supreme Court's going to strike it down.
And I agree with him. It's going to be 7-2, 8-1, something like that. It might be 9-0, but it's definitely going to get struck down. But again, that's the IEEPA, sort of the emergency-based, crisis-based tariffs. But there are many other avenues for tariffs that he can pursue. And they started doing that very quickly, but those ones take time. In fact, you know what? This is a little bit of a long quote, but I have just the right amount of time to play this before the traffic on the fives. Just so you understand, even if the Supreme Court strikes down the IEEPA-based tariffs and then they have to issue refunds on the basis of that strike down and give the money back, it doesn't mean that they won't be able to implement other equally or at least comparably significant tariffs under other protocols, under other situations, but those take time.
This doesn't change the fact there are plenty of avenues for the president to apply tariffs. The difference is the way they applied IEPA, he was literally doing it on Friday night to go into a place Saturday morning. Under Section 232, as we call, there's a procedure. They have to go to a public record. They have to accept public comments. The Secretary of Commerce has to conduct an investigation. The Secretary of Commerce has to report to Congress and the President. And only at that time can the President apply tariffs if he believes that is the correct solution. The 232 takes about 9 to 12 months. So while the President has been applying IEPA tariffs, which I think he's known all along, they're not going to stand up, they have launched about 100 Section 232 investigations since he became President. So things like the your bathroom cabinets. He's asked that those are a matter of national security. If you think I'm joking, please Google it up. So those are under investigation, your bathroom vanity mirrors that they sell at Lowe's are subject to a 232. Last I heard, there's a 232 on wind and wind products. So, but there's like 100 of these out there right now.
So abuse the IEPA provision, put in fast tariffs that are huge. Everybody pays because it's in law, because the President ordered it. Sue to strike those down, which the Supreme Court will do, but it's going to take more than a year to do it. So you've got to file not just the lawsuit against the tariffs, but also the lawsuit to make sure you get protected to get your refund. In the meanwhile, the Trump administration has launched hundreds of these Section 232 investigations in order to justify tariffs on a whole bunch of products across a wide range of things that in the meantime are going to come into effect. And so then are they even going to be able to get a refund? Will they get a refund and then have to turn right back around and pay the federal government for the in arrears owing? Well, it won't be in arrears at that point, but for the new tariffs that are applied. You see how complicated this is. That's why I wanted to share this with you. And more of this at 7 and 8, because there's a lot to this, not just on this subject, but other aspects of it as well. John, did you understand any of this 10 minutes ago?
Yes. No, I didn't. I didn't know 10 minutes ago.
Right. And that's the point. That's why Henry did this. That's why I wanted to share it with you, because I don't think almost anybody outside of the importing community understands this, and certainly not members of the media. And I'm trying to tell you a story about what's going on in the economy, and now you get a slice of it. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. If you're on Highway 29 going southbound toward 9 Mile, experience about a 3-minute delay, and that's about it. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
This is Pastor Carl Gallups of the Hickory Hammock Baptist Church here in Milton. If you're looking for a church family that is truly amazing, let me invite you to come and worship with us this Sunday. Here's what you'll find: a church whose doors are open to all people wishing to worship and serve the Lord. You'll find a church where the exaltation of Jesus and the accurate preaching and teaching of the contextual Word of God is the centerpiece. You'll find a consistently solid, peaceful, and friendly family of multiplied hundreds of people. You'll find dynamic, Spirit-filled worship services, youth ministries, children's ministries, senior adult ministries, men and women's ministries, praise teams, choirs, ensembles, and drama ministries. Plenty of opportunity for Bible study and guidance for your Christian life. In other words, when you and your family get up on Sunday mornings from now on, you'll say, "Oh, good, it's time to go to church." For directions and worship service times, look us up in the phone book or call the church office at 623-8959 or visit us on the web at www.hickoryhammockbaptist.org. And then we'll see you Sunday.
10 athletes will face the toughest job interview in fitness that will push past physical and mental breaking points. You are the fittest of the fit. Only one of you will leave here with an iFit contract for $250,000.
This is when mindset comes in.
Someone will be eliminated.
Pressure is coming down.
Trainer Games on Prime Video, January 8th. Watch the trailer on trainergames.com.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel this Friday at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stephen? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them this Friday at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Book 'em, Dano.
All right, I'm gonna challenge you to come up with this song, source, movie, artist, anything. It's Big Audio Dynamite.
Drive Me Crazy.
It's Bad from Ferris Bueller. Stay Off. If you know that movie, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
all right, so
dude.
There you go. Just my gift to you.
Thank you.
Steve Taylor is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. Steve?
Well, here's something that is happening under the radar. Protests are growing in Iran right now as students are calling for the end to the regime rule there. Hundreds of protesters are taking to the streets in Tehran with chanting death to the Islamic Republic. The protest started over the weekend as the Iranian currency is hitting a new low against the dollar. And really, I don't know if we've been paying attention to what's going on over there, but it's been huge protests in a country that really doesn't allow that.
Right.
And with everything that's going on with their atomic program and so forth, it's interesting.
And the allegation that they're working on restarting it. Right. Yeah. No,
yes.
This is big news.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And a history of when people stand up and protest in Iran and the Americans do not fully, we support in spirit but not fully, and then people get quashed and it's, you know, it feels like China, same kind of thing. No, you're right. This is a big story that we ought to be paying more attention to. Thanks for bringing it up.
Fox News. Ms. Foster, the Trump administration is freezing federal child care funding in Minnesota over allegations of widespread fraud.
Health and Human Services Deputy Secretary Jim O'Neill posting on social media, "We've frozen all child care payments to the state of Minnesota. You have probably read the serious allegations that the state of Minnesota has funneled millions of taxpayer dollars to fraudulent daycares across Minnesota over the past decade." And Governor Tim Walz is fighting back, saying, "This is Trump's long game. We've spent years cracking down on fraudsters. It's a serious issue. But this has been his plan all along. He's politicizing the issue to defund programs that help Minnesota."
Fox David Spahn. Tatiana Schlossberg, John F. Kennedy's granddaughter, died 35 years old. She said last month she had a rare type of leukemia. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 6:31 right now, 32 degrees right now, and it's clear but chilly. I'm Steve Taylor in for the vacationing David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. The good news, if you love the beach, because you don't have to go far to find a really nice one, it happens to be two of the country's best beaches are right here in Northwest Florida. Condé Nast Traveler released the latest Reader's Choice Awards for the top beaches in America, and our very own Pensacola Beach took the number one spot. Navarre Beach came in at number two. Nearly 757,000 people around the world voted on the list, and the two Northwest Florida beaches even beat out five beaches in Hawaii that ranked third and through the number seven. So if you're looking for a world-class beach experience, you don't have to go very far. Looks like the Holly Navarre Water System wants to raise rates again. Customers could see another 12% increase starting in 2026, just a year after the same increase in 2025. Business owner Terry Light told Channel 3.
Yeah, I'm like anyone else. You know, I don't like to pay more for anything that I purchase, and I actually have a home and a business, so I'm paying twice for my water.
CEO Jeff Krigler says rising costs are forcing the proposal.
Our chemical costs are going up, our supply cost, equipment cost. This is an energy intensive process, so if energy prices rise, our costs go up there, because, you know, we need power to run our pumps and our wells and all that.
The system's aging infrastructure needs attention. Most pipes and equipment dates back to the 80s and 90s. If approved, the average bill would jump from nearly $90 a month to over $100 a month. The board is voting on that on January 20th. Downtown Pensacola is in transformation. The new Palafox project is breaking ground next week, but the work is not going to stop all the celebrations. Pensacola Mardi Gras is launching the second line Tuesdays to keep the crowds downtown and support local businesses during the construction phase. Mayor D.C. Reeves says he's impressed by that creative partnership.
I appreciate and applaud the efforts of the Mardi Gras folks to say, hey, how do we think of something outside the box to go help these small businesses, and I hope I continue to see some of that. And I'm very appreciative of creative ideas to say, hey, maybe there's a way we can, through this difficult time that we can help continue to support our small businesses.
The Mardi Gras season is kicking off this weekend in Seville Quarter. A family in Escambia County is safe after a cooking accident sparked a fire in their home. The Escambia County Fire Department says firefighters were called to the 3200 block of East Olive Road about 10:30 Monday night. And by the time the crews arrived, the residents had already put out the kitchen fire with their fire extinguisher. Firefighters used the fans to clear smoke from the unit, and officials say nobody was injured in that incident. Well, looks like it's going to be a chilly but a beautiful evening for New Year's tonight. And forecast says it should be a sunny day before we get to New Year's with a high of 56. Tonight, down to about 44 degrees. Should be comfortable if you wrap up a bit. Tomorrow should be sunny with a high of 65 degrees. And right now, let's see if I can find John Pickens to check in with him for traffic on the fives.
That's right. I'm right here and no accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110. No delays. Everything is looking good this morning. I'm John Biggins with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks, John. 31 in Pensacola right now. It's chilly. Yeah, 32 in Gulf Breeze. 28 in Milton at 6:35. Next news at 7. Breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. For the fifth consecutive week, gas prices are dropping nationwide. Gas Buddy reports the national average has fallen to $2.75 per gallon. This is down 23 cents in the last month. In 40 states, average gas prices are below that $3 per gallon marker. The standard mileage rate for the business use of a car, truck, van, or other vehicle will increase by 2.5 cents in 2026. The IRS announced that beginning January 1st, the standard mileage rate for qualifying vehicles will be 72.5 cents per mile for 2026. China's Commerce Ministry says it will impose additional tariffs of 55% on beef imports from some countries, including Brazil and the U.S., when shipment amounts exceed certain quotas. The measures will take effect on January 1st of 2026 and will last for 3 years. Futures are slightly lower. On Tuesday, the Dow Industrials lost 94, the NASDAQ down 55, the S&P 500 down by 9. That's your money now.
The average checking account pays less than a tenth of a percent. PenAir Credit Union's high-yield checking? 5.05% APY. That's more than most savings accounts. And 70 times more than any old checking account. Make every deposit count. Learn more at penair.org/checking. Federally insured by NCUA, PenAir's high-yield checking account pays up to 5.05% annual percentage yield with e-statements and a monthly ACH deposit of $250 or more.
CVS Health supports people in the moments that matter, from picking up a prescription to connecting care. With nearly 5 million daily interactions and serving 185 million consumers and 1.5 million healthcare professionals, CVS Health holds a trusted place in healthcare. By simplifying care and improving health, we're helping people get the care they need. Learn more at cvshealth.com/investorday.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
A new exclusive offer with an eligible Bank of America Visa credit card is your opportunity to go from cardholder to ticket holder for the FIFA World Cup 2026. For a limited time, when you're approved for a new customized cash rewards or unlimited cash rewards Visa credit card, you're eligible for a chance to purchase FIFA World Cup 2026 tickets. Learn more today at bofa.com/cardfwc26. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, proud to be the official bank of FIFA World Cup 2026. Bank of America NA in partnership with Visa. Terms apply. All rights reserved.
What does the new year mean to you?
Hey, Andrew McKay here. Happy New Year. And if you're making a resolution this year, pick something you can do every day that's so small you'd be embarrassed not to hit it. Those you'll actually do.
Hi, this is Steve Taylor in the newsroom and making my New Year's resolution, which I keep every year. What's my New Year's resolution? To never make New Year's resolutions.
Happy New Year. News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
January 5th commencement. The first being that on or by January 2nd, all furniture in the street right of way needs to be removed. That includes tables, chairs, movable planters, anything that we would consider within the outdoor seating arrangement. Those need to be removed right away by January 2nd.
Palafox is closing Monday, but there are preparations for that. And this is Adrian Walker with the City of Pensacola at the mayor's press conference, not yesterday, but last week, explaining that all your tables, all your chairs, all your stuff that's in the sidewalk area where people are used to sitting, that's all got to go by 2 days, by Friday, because you got to have a 6-foot walkway for people to get through.
That is so we can maintain code compliance and the need for a 6-foot pedestrian pathway during the construction project.
All right. So if you're a business owner downtown, and you've probably received a dozen notices about this, I would imagine. If you haven't, I mean, I want to know. I'm curious. How good has the city been at messaging? I assume fairly repetitive and over much, but that's okay. They want to make sure you hear it. But I'm telling you as well, you got to make sure you move those things by Friday. Just FYI, we're live today. We're live tomorrow. We're live on Friday. We're live, say it with me, every day but Christmas. It's the only day that we're not on the air. I mean, and weekends too, but obviously, you know, weekdays. So anyway, Adrian Walker says, as far as cars go,
starting January 4th, we are going to put out some signage on Palafox reminding people that the road will be closing starting at 6 a.m. on January 5th. So we will have some signage out, making sure people know that they need to get their vehicles removed from Palafox, preferably by 8 o'clock the night of the 4th. Otherwise, cars will be towed at their expense. So we want to over-communicate that and do everything we can to make sure that we're not having to tow any vehicles on a start date.
Palafox is going to be gallery night for several months, but without the ability to walk in that area. You're going to be able to walk down the sides, pedestrian access 100% on the sidewalks, but down the street, no parking, no driving, and you got to get your cars out of there by Sunday and definitely by 6 a.m. on Monday, because that is when the official closure happens. They do have a website.
In terms of marketing, we launched our new website. It's at www.thenewpalafox.com.
Thenewpalafox.com.
That launched yesterday. That is going to be the hub for all construction-related information. It will be regularly updated. It has a construction timeline. It has details about any closures or anything that people need to know at the immediate. It also has a great promotional opportunity for all the businesses. So you can go on there and see every single restaurant or retail commerce location, and then link directly to their website. It'll also link directly to the Downtown Improvement Board so that you can see events happening, any kind of special promotions that businesses are running. So that website will be regularly updated as things change.
And there's lots of stuff connected to that website. It's very easy to find and then look to see. It's meant to make sure that people have as much access to information and are aware of shops being open and shops having deals and whatever else might be going on, so that we can just do our best to make sure these business owners are not adversely affected by this temporary, you know, several months long, depending on where you are on the street. You know, the ends are going to open before the middle opens. The middle is going to take the longest to complete. You know, the Main Street side and the Garden Street side are going to open the first. But the point is, it's all going to be closed for a while and businesses are going to suffer. Or we assume that. See, this is actually one of the things I'm curious about. Not curious enough that I would want to bet my own money on it as a business owner. I am with them. I think it's likely going to be an adversity to them. But it is possible that when all is said and done, the businesses do just fine without cars. It's logically, right? I mean, I don't mean it's likely. I just mean in the realm of logic, it's possible that the businesses do just fine. It's even, and though it might seem very unlikely, logically possible the businesses do better. This, in some ways, this process is going to give us information that, you know how sometimes people periodically, they talk about the idea of making Palafox into a pedestrian-only zone, right? We've kind of, not something to talk about a lot, but it's been mentioned a few times. And of course, we do that periodically for events and festivities and gallery night and other stuff. I think there's the possibility, again, more logical than likely, but there is the possibility we discover that Palafox as a pedestrian-only zone is equally as robust from a business perspective as having cars. And again, logically speaking, even possibly better, which would very much influence the conversation around what to do going forward. Now, I don't think it's likely that we're going to put all this work into making this a now drivable zone and turn it into a pedestrian zone right away, but it's an opportunity to learn since we have to do it anyway, right? As far as parking goes, several hundred parking spaces will be free during the entire closure.
We have 412 free parking spaces. We are still working out the exact time of how long they will be available. We've had a lot of feedback. Some people are in favor of 24-hour, which does leave you open to people parking there and staying there for an extended period of time and not getting that turnover that's needed for people who are briefly stopping in. We've also had feedback about limiting it to 2-hour, 3-hour, 4-hour, but then you run the risk of having to enforce, and we would rather not write tickets right now. So we are still making a decision on the best course. We're trying to take in any input that we get.
Now, again, that was a week ago, and the mayor did announce that they are yesterday, that they are going with the 24-hour free. And the reason this is relevant, remember the whole conversation about raising the cost to park by a little to $1 an hour instead of 50 cents an hour and making all the spaces be paid instead of having so many free spaces? Remember, the argument there was simply to get turnover. If you give people free parking, well, they park for a long time. If you make them pay for parking, they'll park for shorter periods of time. The employees will move their cars or park elsewhere. People will rotate their cars. You'll free up spaces. That's the idea. Turnover, okay? Well, the conversation around whether to make the 400 spots free 24 hours or free for only, say, 3 hours or 2 hours or whatever is that same conversation. Because if now you have 400 free spaces and you have this ongoing complaint historically about, for example, the employees parking there for 10 hours, well, guess what? Where are the employees going to park? There. You know, so if that uses up all the spaces, then you're back to not having spaces for the customers who want to come downtown and shop, and you may create a problem. Now, the mayor has said they may flex. They may adapt to that, and they may change it as we go along. But we're going to start at 24-hour free and see what happens. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Still rolling accident-free right now, even delay-free. Nothing's going to hinder your way in this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. 437-1620. If you have questions about any of this, somebody texts in. What about the cross streets east and west? Will they be closed or open during the construction, as in, is it just going to be the segments of Palo Fox, or will the intersections be open? Oh, no, it's all closed. It's 100% closed. You literally can't get there from here. You can go east and west at Garden, or you can go east and west at Main and nowhere else, because the intersections are a major part of the renovation. So, no, they will not be. But good question. Good question. But, no, they will not be open. 437-1620, somebody says, I agree, Palo Fox could be pedestrian only. People get mad when they drive up and down twice and can't find a spot to park on. If we just train everybody, you can't park on Palo Fox, park behind or on the side. You can walk in and do whatever you need and then go back to your vehicle. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't have a position on it, but I've been to other places where it's a pedestrian-only zone, and those seem to work pretty well. That seems to create a different kind of space that people kind of come to for its own sake. And we were just in St. Augustine over the last week when they had their Christmas lights up, and you know, they closed down their downtown area. They have some of it is old town where you can't drive anyway. Some of it is where you can drive, and they close it down for their Christmas lights. And you know, I got to tell you, it's kind of a neat thing. Not to give St. Augustine credit for anything, but I mean, it's kind of, you know, it is. It's actually kind of a nice thing. Again, I'm not advocating for that being done on Palo Fox. We're not going to do that on Palo Fox anytime soon. I would not expect. I'm just saying that this will give us an experiment to learn. I hope not a too painful experiment for the businesses on Palo Fox, but you know, they've been sort of moaning and wailing about how this is going to hurt them. And I agree, it likely will. But maybe it doesn't. And, of course, time will tell. The mayor just kind of clarifying on the free spaces for 24 hours versus a limited time maybe later.
My position right now, by default, is to make it 24-hour because that we asked the business owners. I promised the business owners when we met with them during these meetings. We said, I'm not emotional about it either way. We'll do it either way you like it. I do think there's going to be pitfalls with both. And I think it's something that we probably need to assess even during. You know, it might be a scenario where we start it. My hunch would be we're going to start it as 24-hour. And if it becomes a serial problem, then maybe we adjust certain number of spaces. We can adjust from there.
Right. Maybe make 200 free 24 hours and 200 free only for, you know, I mean, there's ways to maybe adjust or massage the rules a little bit later. Oh, and by the way, this is also worth noting. Even if it turns out that businesses break even the same way they would normally or thrive compared to normal with the closure, it's not going to be a perfect result because there's going to be a lot of emphasis on, hey, go downtown more, shop local, support them, help them out through this time, a kind of a community put, which is good. We are the kind of place that will do that. And so even if they do well, it's at the end, it's going to be difficult to know whether they're doing well because, hey, a pedestrian-only zone would be better, or because people are making a concerted effort to support them at a challenging time for them. And, you know, so, but it is still going to be an experiment with results. 649 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you have a kid who is struggling with math, we were just talking earlier about all the math stuff related to tariffs, but if you have a kid who's, you know, math is important. It controls an awful lot of things in the world. And if you got a kid who did well at math and now isn't doing well at math, or who's maybe never done well at math, it's entirely possible. Well, what happens is if you don't learn the right basics in the second grade, then you're in trouble for the fifth grade and everywhere else. And if you don't learn the, you know, maybe you learn the right stuff in the second grade, but you didn't learn it right in the sixth grade, well, now you're in trouble from the seventh grade all the way. It cascades, it builds, and that's the way it's supposed to work. But if you don't get what you need, well, you'll never get there. So that's why Mathnasium exists. Mathnasium is a program designed around identifying the particular things that a child is missing in their toolkit, and then teaching them those things so that then they understand what they're doing, they can do what they need to do, and they can build for future and improve grades, improve their happiness level, their skill level, all the things you want from a kid when it comes to learning math. So go by. Just stop. It's a completely free assessment. Mathnasium. Dear friends of ours that own Mathnasium, my son worked at Mathnasium for a year. We are big believers in the program. I'm emphatic about the value of having a solid math education. But the assessment is completely free, and they are step-up providers, so there is funding available from the state. They're located next to Marshall's in the Fresh Market Shopping Center at 9th and Airport. And since it's the new year, or will be tomorrow, they also have this kind of cool sheet they're giving out to anybody who asks for it. It's math resolutions designed to help you kind of track your progress. And, you know, it's something a kid can use, even whether you're part of the Mathnasium program or not. It's just something a kid can use in order to, you know, maybe make some improvements or at least kind of see how they're doing along the way. And you can get one of those free just by stopping by. Again, 9th Avenue and Airport next to Marshall's in the Fresh Market Shopping Center, Mathnasium.
This holiday season, whether you're shopping for clients, coworkers, or loved ones, Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze makes gift-giving easy and memorable. From custom apparel and drinkware to unique holiday gifts and decor, you'll find the perfect way to show your appreciation and spread cheer. Make your gifts stand out with personal touches and professional quality, all from your local experts at Prim and Proper. Visit them at 336 Gulf Breeze Parkway or primandproper.com.
Party down with a big bang as Shelton Fireworks celebrates being in business for 50 years. They're located on I-10 at exit 53. That's the first Alabama exit in Robertsdale, Alabama. Shelton's has the world's largest selection with over 35,000 square feet of fireworks. They have the largest finale cakes and the largest mortars legal in the USA. If it goes boom, Shelton's got it. Located on I-10 at exit 53. That's the first Alabama exit in Robertsdale, Alabama. For more info, go to sheltonsfireworks.com. Shelton's Fireworks, home of the big ones.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
This is Jim Grimes from Southern Media wishing you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is Chad Piku with Affiliated Insurance wishing you a wonderful Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Hi, this is Lauren Cutter from Pete Moore Chevrolet wishing you a joyful and magical Christmas filled with love, laughter, and cherished memories.
This is Sally Coe from Pensacola Hardware wishing you a wonderful Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Get the Midday News live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
That tickles.
I just think Elmo's got to call HR now. That's all that means.
Yeah, 630, that does.
653 on News Radio 92.3. You'll never be able to use your Tickle Me Elmo the same again. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Oh, I mean, you've heard Steve talking about this story. It was widely reported on social media yesterday, but the Condé Nast Traveler list of best beaches in the United States came out yesterday, and pretty interesting list because if you look through it, okay, the number 15 on the list, it's actually worthwhile going through the list to see where they are. Number 15 was Coronado Beach, California. Then St. Augustine Beach was 14. Lake Havasu in Arizona was 13. Caligny Beach in Hilton Head was 12. Padre Island, Texas is 11. Number 10 was Orange Beach, Alabama. So that's number 10. 9 was Trunk Beach in the Virgin Islands. You know, it's a territory. You don't think of that as being the United States, but it is. I mean, it's an odd one. Siesta Beach in Florida got number 8. And then comes all the Hawaiian beaches. Kailua Beach Park, Kanapali Beach was number 6. Hapuna Beach State Park was number 5. Kauanoa Beach or Mauna Kea Beach is at number 4. And Waikiki Beach is number 3. So number 7 through number 3 are all Hawaii. And sometimes they do this where you think like it's just the continental U.S. because who can compete with Hawaii? I mean, who beats Hawaiian beaches? I'll tell you who beats Hawaiian beaches. Navarre Beach, number 2. Number 2, Navarre Beach, where it talks about the reefs and snorkeling and all kinds of cool stuff. And then number 1 on the list, Pensacola Beach, Florida. Top spot on the list, Pensacola is so much more than its beach. Venture beyond its perpetually summery sands. I love that. And discover a thriving arts and culture scene, well worth its own full itinerary. That's true. So-called Festival City of the South, Pensacola has a fully booked dance card of cultural programming to catch, including Mural Fest, the Great Gulf Coast Arts Fest, and the Pensacola Fufu Festival, all of which happen in November, showcase a wide range of regional artistic talent. Add on a revitalized nightlife scene plus a culinary landscape where you can tell the chefs are having fun and you have the ingredients for a formidable Reader's Choice Award winner. So well done, Pensacola. And that was part of their analysis, was not just who's got the best, the pretty beach, but the best vacation spot beach to go to, including food, arts, entertainment, activities, all that kind of stuff. I think the brag point here, yes, that we got number 1 and Navarre got number 2, we got number 1 and number 2, but that we beat all the Hawaii beaches. That's pretty impressive, frankly. That's really good. John Pickens has traffic on the 5s. John?
Well, still rolling accident-free and even delay-free. Nothing to let you know about. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5s.
There you go, John. Thanks so much for the update. All right, Steve Davis is in the newsroom with our headline. Steve?
Steve Davis?
What did I say?
who's that guy?
Who's Davis? I don't even know where that is. Steve Taylor, David Wayne, John Pickens, Davis... Wood, I don't know. There's all these different people. So go on, Steve. Well, whatever your name is, Johnson.
Yeah.
Oh, I know who Steve Davis Harvey. Is. This is my good friend from PPD.
Oh, now you finally got the names together.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
Where's my memory pills?
A body's been found in the search for a missing 19-year-old Texas girl. Camilla Olmos had been missing since leaving her home in San Antonio the day before Christmas. They say they found the body in an area of tall grass a few hundred yards away from her home. And, of course, the body matched the description of the girl. Well, this is kind of a New Year's weather report. Forecasters say the New Year's Eve ball drop in New York's Times Square could be the coldest since 2017. It's already 2026 in some corners of the world, but the forecasts say by the time the new year reaches the U.S. East Coast, the temperature in Manhattan will be about 30 degrees, and the wind chill will make it feel about 20. Meanwhile,
what are you, some kind of flat earther? Well, corner of the world? What are you talking about, Willis?
That's right, yeah.
The earth is not
flat. Description really doesn't work anymore. Yeah, right. Think about it. Yeah, it was because Columbus sailed.
Well, they knew it before that, too. Yeah. Go on.
Forecasters in Southern California, continuing the weather report, say there's nearly a 100% chance of rain on the Rose Parade. It's set for, of course, tomorrow morning in Pasadena and ahead of the Rose Bowl game, which is also going to be kind of rainy. So basically for us, though, our weather is, I'd say, perfect. It's cool and clear tonight and in the upper 40s, and that's what's happening.
Do you happen to know, is the Rose Parade a rain or shine? I would imagine it is.
I would imagine, because it is only, you know, set for New Year's Day.
Yeah, it's always, they can't, I mean, what would you, I mean, I can't imagine them running it in the rain with all the, but I can't imagine them not running it either, so I just don't know the answer.
Plus, the flowers have a short shelf
life. Oh, yeah,
life.
You can't come back and do it on, you know, the next day. It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way, no.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for the update. 6:58 on News Radio 92.3. What else? Oh, this is kind of a neat thing. You know, the PNJ, Mary Lett, who writes for Education for the PNJ, put out a story yesterday talking about the Escambia Children's Trust and, you know, what are their goals, their strategic plan, what are some of the things that they have done. And the story that she put out yesterday is not all that interesting. I'm not insulting. I'm just saying it's a prefatory story, because what the PNJ is going to do is they're going to put out 9 different stories over the next like week and a half, 2 weeks, of particular things that the Escambia Children's Trust has funded and whether they worked or didn't work or could do better or could do worse. So this is going to probably be on the ballot this year for renewal. It doesn't have to be, but it's like the commissioners have been rumbling about this, and we had all the dust up over the legal issues of, you know, who gets the tax increment financing? Does it go to the county and the CRA? Does it go to the Chamonix Children's Trust? The city is having the same conversation, although I think they've kind of resolved their stuff, or at least they will resolve it amicably. So I love this. I love that the PNJ is going to do a thorough presentation of what the Children's Trust has done, how well it's worked through these various programs. I mean, this is like the kind of stuff a newspaper should be doing. And good for them, good for Mary Lett for doing this. I'm kind of excited to read these accounts, because even I feel a lot of times like, how do you track how well the ECT is doing, and should we be interested in it or not? And so I'm looking forward to reading them.
Local Talk in the Morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3. WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.